Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is the lovely Monday, July 7th, 2003. Today's session is Companioning with Mary for Healing. Session 1 of Spiritual Direction with Mary as a Role Model, presented by Mary Etta Skinner. The number is SKM2003-03. Let's listen in.
And I'll just feel free to... Your name, where you're from, what's your tradition of faith, and a sorrow or a celebration. You just can begin speaking.
I'll start. I'm Tracy, and I'm from Sebastopol, California, which is north of San Francisco. And I was raised Lutheran. And I now belong to a church, a community church that's the United Church of Christ. And also I belong to a synagogue, my husband, the rest of my family. And a sorrow or a celebration. Well, right now, I guess it's kind of a little bit of both. For me as a mother, my daughter is 14, and it's very present with me that she's moving from being her little girl self to being her eventually woman self, and she's in that weird teenage transition phase.
And so it's
a celebration, sort of, for me to have a daughter that's doing that. And it's also, and then my other daughter's 11, and she's still very much in the little girl realm, but I see little signs that that's going to change soon. And so that's a celebration, but it's also sad.
Okay.
As a mom.
Thank you.
So, yeah.
Thank you.
My name's Mary, mother of Nathan, not Jesus. And I'm from Redmond. I go to Cross of Christ Lutheran in Bellevue. For me, I have a great, huge celebration because my daughter was in severe depression throughout her whole teenage years, from 12 till 18, and she has just gotten off all of her medications, and she's in college now and doing great, and she's happy, and she's laughing again.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just huge for me.
Thank you.
My name is Pauline, a name that I never liked because my sisters, who were a generation older than I, were allowed to name me. So I am glad that they didn't name me Bertha or Gladys, but Pauline's in that same generation. At any rate, I was raised very fundamentalist, conservative, anti-liturgy, anti-Catholic, and so forth. And it gave my mother a great deal of grief when my best friend was Marlena Hernandez, a very devout Catholic girl. And so she taught me lots of stuff. But I became a Lutheran when I was 19 and go to Cross of Christ with Mary and live in Kirkland. I have four daughters. And about your teenage daughter, it doesn't always get better, but it does get different. And my joy would be for celebration, one of my daughters, who has been hospitalized a number of times with severe depression and is a little bit bipolar, is still on meds and still seeing her shrink, but she is doing much, much better and was home with us for a week last month, and it was great. And the sorrow, though, is also tied to the same daughter because her sister, who's close to her in age, has hardened her heart toward her. And so that causes me a lot of grief.
My name is Sue, and I'm from Maple Grove, Minnesota, which is just outside of Minneapolis. And I was raised Methodist, but became a Lutheran when I married my husband. My celebration and sorrow are kind of a combination too, because I raised my children to be independent, and then they went off and became so. The audacity of them. So they lived far away, and that was sad, but now they have come back to the cities. I don't know for how long, but they're living there now, and so that's great joy to me. And they do get just great as adult children.
I'm Terry, and I'm from Lowell, Minnesota, and we're a painter in the village. What is the joy? You wanted to know sorrow or have joy? Joy is to be here, and sorrow is I'll be leaving next Tuesday. And I was raised Lutheran, and now I'm just kind of off on my own, living where I want to be.
Is there anyone else that is comfortable in sharing? It's not something you have to do, but...
My name is Bill, and I'm from St. Louis, and I grew up Lutheran, and I'm still Lutheran, although I kind of made a little journey. I grew up in the Missouri Synod, and I'm now an ELCA pastor. Before coming, my wife and I stopped over in Gig Harbor, where I had two grandchildren. So that was fun. That's a big joy. My sorrow is with my own mother, who's physically healthy, but I just sadly see her mind and recognition leaving. That's a difficult thing.
I'm Rick, and I'm from Sebastopol, California, also with Tracy. And as she said, I grew up within the conservative Jewish tradition, which is sort of the middle. I kind of think of it as the Lutheranism of Judaism. It's not really Orthodox, and it's, not really Reformed. And still, my beliefs are still, and my identity still is a Jew. But I've been influenced by also sort of Buddhist philosophy and Christianity, I guess, over the years, although there's certain lines that I draw. Tracy expressed what both of us are dealing with in the parental role. On the other side of it, my dad moved in with us about 5 months ago, and that's been a little, mostly joy, a little bit of sadness, because I remembered things from my childhood about living with him I hadn't remembered before. And also because it's a good way of putting it. I have a sister who's hardened her heart to me and my family, and my dad moving with us is just another nail in the coffin of slights to her somehow. So that's been something that's just been kind of constant, but more recently just because of that.
Thank you.
I'm Lucy. I'm from Culver City, California, which is the west side of Los Angeles. And I was raised a Lutheran. I made a detour into Pentecostalism, but then I unsaw the light and came back to being a Lutheran.
The light went out.
And so now I'm back being a Lutheran. And let's see. My joy is to be here at all, because I have a job that's difficult to pull away and actually be somewhere where they can't call you on the phone. And I had to really plan way in advance to be able to be here. And just coming up the mountain and realizing that, I was really out of touch of all the electronics of daily life was just like a weight off of me. So that's been a great joy. And also to be here with Christine and her husband and my daughter, and to be with good friends is just a real joy. And I don't have any big sorrow that I'm dealing with at the moment. I'm just feeling really just so relaxed, so happy to be here.
Great.
I'm Eileen Hauser, and I'm from a town right outside of Portland, Oregon. I've always been a Lutheran, and my mother's getting older, and it's kind of hard being close to her and taking care of her, and yet she's still my mother, and my great joys are my sons and their families and my husband.
I'm Joyce Nelson, and from Winona, Minnesota, and been Lutheran all my life, although I kind of like to be Catholic sometimes because I love all the ritual stuff. I love all the beads and the statues. I don't know why I'm attracted to that, but I'm attracted to ritual. And I had a little sorrow in the last session we were doing photography, and all of a sudden the image of my dad was a farmer, kind of corny, and my dad used to always put his, if you take a picture of somebody, he'd be standing over here and put his finger in the picture, so you always had this photograph of my dad's finger, and it sort of made me sad, because he passed away a few years ago. It's kind of nice to remember that, but kind of sad, because he's not around.
What, are you sure that was deliberate? Because, you know, I have a lot of pictures.
I was taking a picture. Somebody else was taking a picture. And you see the picture back. And
okay.
You remember Dad being there and he put his picture in the
picture. I'm Pam, Pam Boyle, and I'm from Detroit, Michigan. And I was raised Presbyterian, and now I'm part of a non-denominational Christian church. And I don't think I have any great sorrow right now either. I think I have a 14-year-old who is kind of a sorrow and a joy, the sorrow when she's off thinking I'm just not worth listening to well. You know, too old to pay attention to, and then joy when she's back in fellowship and discussing, so that's kind of a bittersweet experience. But other than that, I think my greatest sorrow recently has been leaving a Christian community, and then the flip side is a great joy in the establishing of a new community.
And I'm the last but not least, I think. My name is Christine Holton. I'm from Los Angeles also. And also a lifelong Lutheran with forays into Catholic tradition, which I very much appreciate. Thank you. And sorrow is my mother died at the beginning of this year. Joy is to be here because I feel like I'm finally going to have time just to, you know, be nurtured by this community and by nature, which I find very nurturing. So.
Thank you. By asking you to give your names and some identity, as well as some feeling of celebration of sorrow, it is a step in having some identity with Harry. In that, you and she and I are all spiritual beings. Spiritual in the meaning that you have school spirit, you have community spirit, you have sports. It's what moves you, it's what shakes you, and there's always something within us that's moving us and causing us to act, to do, and to be. And from the focus where I'm coming from is that the spirit is holy and it is sacred. In spiritual direction, whoever comes in, however they believe, they are seen as a holy and sacred person made in the image of God. And in the traditions that are here, Christian and Jewish, I believe I'm safe in saying that the very beginning of our stories of creation, it is the very breath of God that breathed over the waters, and out of the darkness and chaos brought light. And then the creation came into being, and God looked around and saw that it was good. And then when it gets to the male and female in Genesis 1 made together, God looked around and said, very good. So the sacred, the holy is within, out of, I would say, our creation story. But in that first story, there's something else interesting that goes on. And in the Bible translation that I have of the Old Testament, God asks four things of what the human that's been created. That's be fruitful and multiply, to fill the earth, to subdue and have dominion. That to me sounds rather forceful, but I find the Hebrew very interesting, and I'd like to share that with you because I think it puts it in the perspective that in joys, in sorrow, in the whoever we are, we have the presence of a partner called God who would like to be with us. True, God did ask us to have children, but when you get to fill the earth, in the Hebrew language, it's like to bless, like just hold everything with a blessing. And then to subdue is, in Hebrew, one of the meanings is a medical term, is that when you have a wound and it's all pussy and infected, you want to clean it out very tenderly. So that's the term there, to treat tenderly and to be treated tenderly, and then to have dominion is to make it work. And so with that as a description, and then flowing into the second chapter of Genesis, it's the breath of God that breathes into the earth and makes Adam man. And then in the story that I'm familiar with, it's the rib of the woman, and that's like a helpmate. But the key here is, and this brings us back to being holy, being sacred, is again in the Hebrew language, the term for woman as a helpmate is hesed, which is only used for God in any other time in the scripture. So the woman, female, made in the image of God are the very being of God and the helpfulness of God. So I really want to emphasize that in spiritual direction and in the spiritual journey, and the journey which Mary took, it begins with being holy and with being sacred in all parts of who you are. One of the impressions for me in growing up was I would volunteer summers, and that put me into contact with the first summer in the slums of Chicago with illiterate African Americans that had come out of the South for life to be better, but also the Japanese that had been released after World War II from the internment camps when they'd been taken from their homes on the West Coast. And they couldn't go back. Everything had been taken away from them, so they settled like in the areas of the city like Chicago, where I happened to be in low-income housing. And so with the children of these parents, I became familiar. And then in that process of giving away in the summers, it was with Puerto Ricans, it was up in the Alps with people who could come in from the communist world to pray with those on the Western world at a retreat center. So I began to see the sacred and the holy as much more than even my skin color, my economics, or whoever I was. So when I came into contact with Mary, and one of the things that God says to Mary is, favored one, the Lord is with you. That really resonates. It's like God is speaking to humanity, to what God and to whom God has made. And then Mary begins a spiritual direction, a journey. She begins to do and to act and to believe. And let it unfold. And one of the things I learned in looking at Scripture, and it comes out of the Roman Catholic tradition of Ignatius of Loyola, who was a contemporary of Martin Luther, lived in Spain, a military, was a soldier. And he believed in the discipline that he had that you could take any scripture, Old Testament, New Testament, any scripture, and you could walk into it. You could read it, find a word or a phrase that had some meaning to you, and then you spend time with that. And the coolness of the door
really
gets cooled down enough.
Because I think the mosquitoes like us.
Yeah, they're all over here.
Is there a screen for that?
There is.
So, with this walking into Scripture, and letting the character or letting a word become alive, then you really have the sense that as God spoke then, God still speaks now. And my first experience with this was in my last year at seminary when I saw a note up on the bulletin board that a spiritual director needed somebody to direct. And for the first time in my life, I felt like Mary, favored one. Because for the first time, there was somebody listening to me, not telling me how, not telling me what, just simply giving their full attention to who I was and what I was saying. Didn't try to change me in the least, would feed back to me, would help me articulate, and that was just a really wonderful experience. And I wondered, is that what Mary felt like when favored one, that there was an interaction there that for whoever she was and however she was, the Lord was with her. So I made a commitment that in my years as a pastor, I would always have a spiritual director, because I was going into the unknown and into the mystery, and I didn't know what was going to come about, and I wanted somebody to walk with me. So once again, that throws me back into the person of Mary.
Got it.
That from the message coming to her from an angel, depending on the translation you have, it says that she was perplexed. She pondered. In other words, that she was confused. There are some real feelings there. Not the head stuff, but the feeling stuff that she was able to express. You know, I really don't know what all of this is about. And then makes the decision that she will journey with it. So she walks into the mystery. So one of the things that's also for us is that life is a mystery to be lived, not a problem to be solved. That we walk into it, we don't know the answer, we know and can be assured we're sacred and holy, and Mary was assured that the Holy Spirit would come, that the power of the Most High would overshadow and would be present. And she was able to say, here am I, I'm willing to walk in the mystery, really don't know where it will go, but I am your servant. So a spiritual journey has begun with this young Jewish woman named Mary. Another point in spiritual direction, or the journey and having someone with you, is exactly what Mary did. With all of this coming in on her and what it might mean and not knowing, she goes to someone who will really listen and be present with her. She goes to Elizabeth. And she stays for quite a while. And I find it very interesting. It says, Mary went with haste to be greeted by Elizabeth. I find Elizabeth asking no questions or telling her she's off the wall, so this couldn't really be true. I find, read that Elizabeth says to her, blessed are you. Very accepting, very non-judgmental, letting her be who she was. And that's another step in the process of spiritual direction, that when you have a companion walking with you, accepting you as you are, feeding back to you the words that you may be saying, you begin to frame words and articulate around what's going on inside. It helps you to get in touch with a deeper part of yourself. Then Mary says something very interesting. She says, my soul magnifies. She doesn't say my head or my brain or my thinking. She says my soul, which I would take as a definition, all that is within. Totally, wholly, wholly, all of me. And my spirit rejoices. Her doing, her being, her acting, whoever she was, the movement, it rejoiced that she was able to respond. Then in following the life of Mary, another point comes out is that there's belief that God is present in everything. And in that presence of everything, it could be the same, but it can open up to newness. There are three brief little stories that mention Mary that are very traditional. She's following the traditional, and you can help me with this, it'll keep me straight, Jewish, that Jesus was circumcised, her son was circumcised, was taken to the temple for presentation, and on the Passover, they went to Jerusalem to celebrate. So these were traditional happenings that Mary was following, but God's presence in those situations began to open up to something that was different. Because when her son was presented in the temple, Simeon and Anna responded with a different direction, that there would be a light, there would be glory, and that a sword would pierce Mary's heart. So this opens something new into what is a traditional. And then at the Passover, when they went to celebrate and give honor and praise to what had happened when the people were taken out of Egypt by Moses and God passed over the Hebrew people, celebrating this, they go on their way home and they miss Jesus, Mary's son, return, find him in the temple, speaking with those who are wise. So here again is a traditional thing, but it takes another spin and opens up a new door for God's presence to be let in. Mary is only mentioned three more times. One is when Jesus was getting into difficulty by what he was saying and doing. Mary, with his brothers and sisters, went to warn him or to possibly take him away with them. And the disciples said to Jesus, your mother and your brothers are here. And Jesus says, well, who are my mother, my brothers, and my sisters? They are the ones, I can see him going, they are the ones who believe in the presence of God. So here's another aspect of spiritual direction, that newness comes to life, something is incarnated, something is birthed that hasn't been thought of before, that there's more than just the blood relationship, there's the believing relationship, and that those who believe belong to being part of the family. I'd like to go back to another comment that was made when Mary was first mentioned, when she said, nothing is impossible with God. And I'd now like to tell a story of a child that pulls together living a life that's mystery, being sacred and holy, by having a companion alongside, seeing the presence of God in everything, being able to articulate that, and then something new springing forth. As a teacher, I once was asked to start a school for emotionally impaired children at the University of Iowa. And there was this strange child that was on the children's ward. The children had just been tutored, and the idea was to form a school so that they could interact together. But there was this one child, he was an African-American child, about 12 years old. He had come from Arkansas. He had been born strange from birth, and his parents, when he was able to walk, had built a fence around their yard because there was no way that they could touch him or have him respond to them, and they didn't want him running loose around town causing problems, particularly with the white neighbors. So the father left for Iowa 7 years before I met David in child psychiatry at the University of Iowa, and he was working to make enough money to put his two older sons through college and to get help for David. So here's this boy running around barefooted because nobody could convince him or could touch him to put shoes on him, fingers in his ears, just babbling. And here was my role to have this impossible child in a school situation. So it began with on a one-to-one with me, and I had no way to companion him. I had no way to listen and feed back to him. I had no way to identify with him. So the time was spent with him on the floor, you know, kicking at me. And there was no touching in this strange and I would say rather mysterious child. And then one day in staffing, somebody said, "I think David can read." Well, here's a mystery. How did he learn to read? No one really knows. But the next time he came, I made sentence strips. "David, get up off of the floor. David, stop kicking me," with directions. So I had a way to identify with what David was doing. I held up the sentence strip, "David, get up off of the, David, stop kicking me." He stopped. I grabbed the next one, "David, get up off of the floor." He got up off of the floor. So David got a companion. He got a companion that found a way to really listen to who, or at least break through to listen to who he was.
How did that one person know that he could read?
He was watching television, and he was reading off.
He was saying the words?
Mm-hmm, out loud, and that's why they thought he could read.
So he could speak?
Yes. He usually babbled, but he could say words.
But he could say words.
You haven't called him autistic, but this is because you don't like to use that term?
Well, at that time, they really weren't using that
back
term.
Back then, they probably just didn't know what was wrong
but
with
he was an autistic child, very definitely so. Then to, and I'm saying this because it broke through to me that things that I've been taught in spiritual direction were happening with this child. So next was the identity and the articulation. He really didn't identify himself as a child, but he began to identify that he was me. So he would speak as me. And then one day when we were sitting out in the yard, and a little puppy came over, and he was really frightened. He's a tall kid. He jumps in my lap, and his arms are lapped around my neck, and all I see is the whites of his eyes. He was scared. He was really frightened. So honoring the feeling of his fright, I put my hand on the puppy and his on top. And again, I could identify with his fear. But then I slid out my hand, and he was petting the puppy, and he was no longer afraid. So to me, this was like an incarnation, a new birth. This child came into being. He started to become David. And then he began to walk down the street with me and go to another kind of school where he could get special attention. I just say that because nothing is impossible with God. And when you have a sacred, holy human being and can be with them where they are, then they do the work that needs to be done with the help of God. Back to Mary.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Does this work for teenagers? Maybe it's only half a joke, but I'm just kind of thinking about
well,
our relationship with our children.
What are you What are you thinking about?
How do we be where they are?
Okay. Got any ideas?
Well, not any good ones, because I suppose I feel that the role of parents sometimes isn't being where they are.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And that's where
and it's hard for a parent. It's hard for a parent, you know, to be there. But if, like with David, I had to recognize his feelings and he could express his feelings and they were acceptable. How often does a parent say to their teenager, how do you feel about that? Or can you tell me more about that? Or what does that mean to you? And really listen. I don't know. I'll have to think about it. But I believe that, I believe from the approach of the acceptance, whoever you are, for even a teenager, and I did happen to see a teenager last week, which was interesting because it was a parental situation. And it was very interesting because whatever she said, I kind of parroted it back. And then she began to sort her thoughts and then was able to express what was going on. And then with David, like putting his hand on the puppy was like what I, so that he could have the feeling, one of the things I asked her to do with all the sadness that she had, could she locate it? And she could. And then we, could you treat it tenderly? Like God asks back in the creation story. Can you really nurture that sadness, that feeling of failure? And then can you lift it out? And she actually could do that. And then have a conversation with it. And then we worked around, or she worked around, to maybe it was possible to say some things to her mom.
I think it's really hard for, what I've experienced is it's very hard for parents to have that kind of a conversation with their teenager. Because my son, I have a 16-year-old who's here, and he has even said to me, Mom, I have to leave you. And that's what they're trying to do developmentally, is leave us, and so they can't be vulnerable with us. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think it's extremely very important for them to have somebody else. Mm-hmm. To have, because mm-hmm. my son just will not be vulnerable in front of me mm-hmm. anymore. And he used to be, I swear it was last year, but he won't anymore. Yeah. And so I recognize that I want him to find somebody or have somebody that he can be that way with, because that sounds like a great idea, but they just won't do it. Mm-hmm.
So
that's my experience.
That would be my experience. I'm a teacher, and I always wondered why the skills I've learned teaching never seemed to work out for me. They work just great with other kids.
Yeah, yeah, it's having a teacher like you. That's what I want my son to have, is a teacher that he can go talk to. And we just have to really.
Well, and as a parent, I think it's really important. Just like when they were two, or they were starting to get independent, you know, they had to know still, I'm always here. You run over there, but then you come back and I'm right here. And they had to know this is where the boundaries are. So you can run around inside these boundaries, but I've set these boundaries and they're always going to be right here. Well, now that they're teenagers, I still think it's the same story. The boundaries are out farther, but I'm still here, and you run off and do your thing and be mouthy, and we're going to talk about it, but I'm still going to be right here, no matter what. And I think that's what they need as they're doing this separating thing, is to know that they're separating, but you're not. And that's, to me, that seems really important in my relationship with my daughter, that no matter if she's nasty, you know, okay, we're going to work that out, but I'm still here. And if she's sweet, we're together and I'm right here. You know, she just knows that that's not going to change. And I think that's important.
The best program, part of the confirmation training in my church with my children was the mentor program, which is part of their confirmation. And whoever matched them, and I know they prayerfully matched them, but my son was matched with a guy that was just like my dad, and my son and my dad are like this, and my daughter. And they still, my son got married last year, he still has a relationship with his confirmation mentor. My daughter, I would never have gotten through those 6 years of severe depression without my daughter's confirmation mentor. And she would take her out when I couldn't get through at all. And she would take her out, and Diana would just like, just talk to her and feel comfortable and share those things.
So that's the companionship on the journey, on the spiritual journey, if you can find a companion. It's probably a lot of reason why the teenagers find, you know, their friends, their companions, because this girl said, you know, I love to hang out with my friends. We can just be who we are.
Mm-hmm.
So. Well, Mary, Mary, Mary. Okay. I'd like to go on with another point to honor the presence of God, even in the shadows and the darkness. And this Mary really had to do at the cross, when her son, where all that happened, you know, the betrayal, the denial, the judgment, the cross, all the shadows and all the darkness. And I think it's very difficult for us to honor the shadows and to honor the darkness that is within us. But one of the points in spiritual direction is that the presence of God is there, and that can be honored. And in the honoring, then God can, or the Spirit will cause things to happen within the person. And then the very last scene of Mary is again with the Spirit at the Pentecost. Mary is in the upper room with the disciples and the certain women and the brothers of Jesus. And Jesus had said, you know, the Spirit will come to you. So people trusted and went to wait. And so once again, the Spirit and the going forward and the being and the doing was there for Mary. And there was a new beginning out of darkness and out of death. Now, she's not mentioned again. I have no idea, you know, what happened to her personally, but at least at the Pentecost, out of darkness and death, new birth comes into being. So basically, the spiritual journey of Mary was for the seed of God to be discovered. And for those who believe in Jesus Christ, is that this was the seed of God that was given birth to. But our spiritual journey is also for this, the seed of this loving God to be discovered and nurtured and given birth. So in spiritual direction, it is life and it is a mystery that unfolds. We don't understand a lot, but with a companion and being accepted as you are at this time, and being able to articulate and pay attention to feelings and care for them, even love them, then new birth and things can happen. Psychology has found out, and I really believe this is how God spoke before we got into books and academics, is that God did speak through all of our senses and through our feelings. Because how else would we have all of these stories of God being present and alive. And I think that's still available. We just haven't tapped into the wisdom that we have inside ourselves. I think what Jesus said as commandments, love God, love your neighbor as yourself. I think spiritual direction, and like in the journey of Mary, is that you begin to love yourself and what you are asked and what you are found to do through all the confusions, through all the shadows, through all the dilemmas. And that's basically what I have to say about Mary and spiritual direction. But if any of you have had experience with spiritual direction, or a connection with Mary, or questions, please, we've had some.
I'm interested in this last concept. I don't know the New Testament very well, but this notion that the metaphor of the seed of God in Mary is a metaphor for the seed of God in anybody, you know, to discover God. And I'm just curious in terms of what the stages, I always think in terms of stages, of her discovery of that were, and how they parallel other people's experience of, you know, how that notion comes alive in themselves.
Yeah, see, well, we know very little about her, but in nurturing the child, the seed of God, she certainly knew the traditions. She certainly knew the stories that were passed on. And she carried through with the role with the traditions. But through the insights of other people, they began to open up this this newness that was springing into being. That it wasn't just going to be tradition. There was going to be newness and openness.
I see.
And I think God is so vast that in our own lives, you know, the seed of God can just grow and grow and grow and grow. It's like it's never done until it's never over till it's over. Because God is so vast that there can just keep being new birth and new creation. Transformations and things that will happen.
It seems like religion, while religion could support that, it seems like it could also really get in the way of that. Mm-hmm. Because if there's this idea that coming out of tradition, being open to the veering off, religion often serves to give people a roadmap. Mm-hmm. I mean, people think of it that way. Mm-hmm. So I'm going on this road. Mm-hmm. Well, if you just have your eyes on this road, you may not be open to the
that's correct
the veering that's going to come along.
Right, and that happens.
Yeah,
and that
that's
happens.
Really scary
and
so, to people. I think it's fear
veering. Yeah.
Because how do you know that where you're veering is really
where
bad?
You're going to go? What that's
and where
you're
going
like.
To go? How you're going to live out the mystery?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's the kind of key part that resonated with me is this idea of, you know, Mary pondering or being perplexed or with the different words you used for that. And I find that kind of to talk about what you were saying, Tracy, that really we don't have a good way in most religious traditions of dealing with that mystery, at least for lay people, maybe clergy people do deal with it, but it's just in recent times that I've seen real references to the mystery of God, and that's what I've always grappled with, is that there's been sort of this really dark, struggling part of my faith.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I was a kid or when I was younger, that was sort of, I was supposed to think that was unbelief, and I'm still struggling with it, but...
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know like Kierkegaard, how to go into that darkness and really just confront it. That maybe is something I'm trying to learn how to do. And maybe we'll spend the rest of my life.
And see.
Thanks, Lucy.
And that's not something I really touched either until I got into training to be a spiritual director. And that's the presence of God in darkness. And what really was important...
Is darkness not knowing?
Darkness or just the darkness that happens, you know, the dark things that happen to us,
hard parts of life that
happen to us, we usually want to push them away and get rid of them. And in the spiritual direction process is that you identify them, you feel them, and you nurture them and you love them. And that's like the seed of God. You know, then the seed of God can begin to grow. And many times the fear of what's there begins to shrivel up. You know, if you talk to the person that's identifying and holding this, then you say, well, what are you feeling now? Well, it's much smaller, or it doesn't hurt anymore. And I think that's the spirit. I think that's the seed of God. And that's not anything that the person does. It's certainly not anything I do, but it allows God to be present. The God that's present inside it allows God to work. And that's mystery. And I think, I don't know what I think.
Well, you know, I'm thinking back to what you said about, you know, and when you commented on Mary, you know, the seed growing in her is like the seed growing in us. And I'm thinking about when you're a parent and you have the baby, the infant is very informed, and you know there's certain things that will happen with this infant, but what that child will develop to be is complete mystery to you. You don't know if they're going to mirror your talents or your abilities, they're going to go and do something completely different. And we don't know that about our spiritual life either. We walk it every day, but we don't know what directions it's going to take, what events will happen, or all of a sudden something will open up that you never even envisioned before. And you know, as good parents, you have to just let it go and try to nurture it wherever it needs to go. And I guess the same thing with our spiritual life.
But it's very difficult because we have our tradition that
we want it to go a certain path.
Keeps us safe.
I had no idea I was going to marry a Jew. That certainly, that wasn't really in my plan early on, you know, or my mother's, really. But it turned out pretty good. That actually wasn't a really dark, difficult thing, but just think that was an easy one.
The unknowing, yeah.
But just not
in the Jewish tradition, the way of dealing with those mysteries is one major Jewish tradition. There's many, but one is to really intellectualize it. Which is the, you know, rabbinic tradition of questioning, and, you know, just questioning and questioning and questioning and actually dealing with the darkness by saying, well, it's just another question we have to spend hours and hours pondering over, you know, which is a part of the kind of Judaism I was brought up in that is a little limiting for me. And that's where, actually, before I met Tracy and everything, I kind of used the Buddhist meditation model, which was not, you want to, it's sort of the exact opposite. In the Buddhist model, you just sort of, you want to get rid of thought. Not really get rid of it, because then you're attached to it, but, you know, y'all know what I'm talking about, right? Step away from thought, which is the exact opposite. And I think different religions do approach that question in many different ways. And I'm curious. I am curious as to how Christianity approaches that question. I mean, I think that the version I have of it is that, and this is oversimplification, is that, well, if all else fails, you've got grace. So if the darkness is too overwhelming, you know, you have your little, you know, safety net over there that you can retreat to. But I think there's probably more to it than that.
To me, it's very... I've been reading things lately that talk about that spirituality is experiential. You have to experience it. And I just sort of key in on that. That to me, my spiritual life has to be an experience, something I have to experience. And so I would think that any kind of darkness, that it would be also be good to experience that and just to feel it and to be there with it rather than to hide it. That whole, that your religion or your spirituality is an experience, because then you can just open yourself up to
seeing things and looking at nature and seeing the actual person rather than this crabby person that's in the grocery line with you. It has to be an experience.
But experiencing that dark place is not... It, in retrospect, it's a good thing. Yeah. It's like when we say, oh, that was a growing experience. Wow, how great that was. But in the moment, it's so hard. Who? I don't want to grow anymore. There's times when I'm done. You know, I'm done. That's enough. Thank you. Done. You know, because that whole dark, it's painful. It's painful. And you feel lost. And maybe in your spiritual, you feel lost spiritually. I mean, like, there is no God. I'm alone. And that is dark. It, you know, so there are times people go through those for whatever reason, mm-hmm. where everything you think you believed, it's not real anymore. Now what do I do? It's really hard.
So, I guess I experienced a long period of it, and I would go down there, mm-hmm. and the first few times I went down, I hated it, and I just thought, why does this have to happen to me? But then as it continued,
yeah.
then I realized, well, I'm going to come back up. So yeah. I'm going to go down there, but then I'm going to learn something. And maybe it was because yeah. of a pretty long period of time in my life that this happened. And after you learn that you're not going to... Of course, then I've never had 6 years of depression.
Yeah.
You know, I've never had that. So it wasn't 6 years. And being depressed all the time, I've never experienced that. And that's a whole different thing that I...
There's a really good Parker Palmer, probably some of you have read it, Let Your Life Speak. It's just such a wonderful book. And in it, he talks about becoming depressed and just, you know, how everybody went up to him and said, well, you know, cheer up, or it's not that bad, or whatever, you know. And he said that the best thing anybody did for him was come over and rub his feet, that was the only thing that helped, just to go back to that companioning thing and just kind of being. And I think that's the hard part about the dark places, that oftentimes you feel that like you're there all alone, mm-hmm. and that there is no one who can be there together with you. Mm-hmm. And my dark places aren't depression. My dark places are my crappy parts of my personality. But, you know, and wishing I could get rid of them.
Yeah, I think that is the difference, that I don't know that I have really experienced true depression, because I read that book too, and he talked about depression. You know, being totally alone. I just never, don't think I ever felt that. You know, I was in Alaska by myself, a 2-year-old.
That's bad.
Yeah. Sounds pretty dark.
But I didn't have that. People talk about depression, and I didn't. You know how you just either have that or you don't. I just didn't ever have that.
I you mentioned not like it's you're all alone, God isn't there. In my own life as a child, there was so much trauma with a child dying and my parents abandoning, particularly me because I was the only other child, that I have no memory. The only memory I have, since my mother had me in Sunday school every Sunday without missing for 13 years because I have the pins. I mean, that's the tradition, you know, that's keeping me safe with right. what she knew best. And I remember shaking the barnyard gate, and I was small, I was been 6, so... and crying out, because I knew that God was supposed to answer prayer, and crying out for my parents to love me. And I have the sense that these years I can't remember was that I was alone. God, you know, I kept crying out to God, but in my last training session in spiritual direction, we were learning what's called active imagination. And that's that anything that's ever happened to you is somewhere in you. And so in active imagination, you know, you just relax and breathe and you go deep into yourself until you reach this area. And then whatever the first image is, stay with the image. So when it came my turn to do this learning situation, I could follow, you know, I could go down in the darkness and I could get down. And the thing that came in my imagination was a baby chicken. And then in the process that we're taught, you know, that for the companion as to the meaning of that, here it was, almost 60 years later, I discovered, I cried for days over this, I discovered that I really wasn't alone, that God had answered, but I missed it, because I expected to be wrapped in my mother and father's arms. And here's how the answer was. It's what kept me safe. It's what kept me sane, is that we had a brooder house with baby chickens. And I could go there and sit down, and the baby chickens liked me. You know, they'd hop all over me, and I could hold them. I was safe, I was secure, and I was loved. And so I discovered that just this May. But it did a tremendous amount of healing of the wounded child. And when I didn't think God was there, God was there. But I didn't expect God to be in the form of a chicken. And so some of the things that I've learned is that God can come in many different ways. I really believe that that was the presence of God. But I didn't know as a child that that's what it was. I understood Jesus being a shepherd and holding the lambs, and I could hold a baby lamb because we were on a farm, you know, and I could do all that pretending stuff. But there wasn't anything in the Bible about a chicken. But so this active imagination and that your body and the wisdom that's within can speak, and that is sacred, that is holy, and God is present, and with a companion, many times it brings the new birth, the incarnation, something new, something that can go on. So I just share that with you because it was so meaningful. Yeah. It was so meaningful for me that, you know, I just want to celebrate and give thanks that I wasn't abandoned and that I am where I am today. Because I think other things will break in now that I will see God in a new and a different and a much more vast light than in the narrow path that I was taught, which is fine. I needed that narrow path. That's a beginning. Mm-hmm. It's a beginning.
So is a spiritual director somebody who's trained to be a spiritual director?
Well, a companion. If you have a companion that can really be with you, I mean, they're with you on the journey, but there are places now to train spiritual directors. I was trained at the Institute for Spiritual Leadership in Chicago, which is Jesuit, the Ignatian kind of background, you know, walking in and making things alive and imaging, and am certified. So there are training places for spiritual direction. And that is, I think, so that things are kept in good order and that what one is taught, you know, is reliable and is of the essence of God.
A lot of them seem to be, all the ones I know about, there are probably others, but
yeah,
in my limited experience, you mentioned it, I've run into a few others, but that's...
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, psychology as a profession is the sort of mostly secularized response to those needs, but there are a lot of us, I'm a psychologist, who are closet spiritual directors, and not just because of, you know, ourselves, but because our clients, you know, they can't enter that way because of how secularized society has become.
Mm-hmm.
But I could say, you know, half the people that I do work with, there's always, you know, there's some kind of spiritual dimension that's being worked. And the language may not even be about that because they're not comfortable with that, although there's some who are.
Mm-hmm.
But there's such a hunger out there, particularly, you know, for people who are, who have never had any kind of, they didn't even have the religious roadmap, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we talk about the religion as being in some ways constraining, but it also is...
It gives you a place to jump
It gives you a place
to
go from, yeah, but yeah. For people who haven't had any of that, it's mm-hmm. really, it's yeah. tough. They don't have a language. They don't have anything mm-hmm. for understanding mm-hmm. that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if you believe that it's, you know, God is everywhere, and yet you're a person who isn't, mm-hmm. you know, it's mm-hmm. it's pretty it's kind
but
of bizarre.
But if I was talking to such a person as a spiritual director... Then I would meet them on their terms.
Right, yeah, the language has to be...
I would
yeah.
stick with their
right.
language.
Right.
I wouldn't bring in my language.
Right, okay. That's what we have to do.
I stay right with their language, and then I figure the Spirit and God will do what God
right.
needs to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to do anything. Right. And somebody last week said to me, aren't you tired after seeing person after person?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, my checkpoint is... If I'm really companioning the person, they're doing the work. And as that happens, then that's energizing. So generally, I almost always, and maybe in psychology too, mm-hmm. you're energized.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have a higher degree of energy because the energy from what's happened spiritually with the person comes off. If I'm really tired, then I know that I've tried to solve a problem.
That's right.
I know that I've tried to fix it, and I've tried to get in and do some of the work, and that's not my job. My job is to facilitate.
That's the same with
teaching. Yeah.
Yeah, that they're connected.
Right.
And you know, and a lot of the things that we learn come from Jung
mm-hmm. yeah.
and Freud and getting into the imagination
right, yeah,
and the depths.
Imagination stuff.
And,
yeah.
And then putting it with the tradition... the Christian tradition, but this institute will work with Buddhists. They will work with, and the what they have, everybody on their spiritual journey, it will work.
How did you connect that with Mary? Is that something that the spiritual direction is?
You mean that this connection with Mary?
Yeah.
No, that's mine. That I like Mary. When I learned about the Ignatian long ago, when I walked with Mary, I stayed with Mary's song, My Soul Magnifies, My Spirit Rejoices. I stayed with that for 2 or 3 weeks. You know, my soul rejoices. I'd get up in the morning and I'd think all these things rejoice. So I like Mary. And I like walking into what could possibly have happened. So I'm just playing around. Not playing. I'm taking this seriously. But I just see a connection, and I need to work it more. This is the first time I've ever
mm-hmm.
thrown this out, because I think something's going on there. Somebody that heard God could be faithful, and then open new doors and go in different directions. Stay steady, go through the darkness, come out with new life.
And, you know, she had her son crucified.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, talk about the darkness.
Dark.
Yeah.
Can't get much darker.
Yeah. So I want to do a lot more with it, but I have to start. And I want to thank you very much.
You didn't
know this, but you
good
are guinea pigs. You're guinea pigs.
You.
So could we start? Could we end with prayer? Lord, you heard our names. You heard our identities. You heard our stories. And we're yours. However we name it, may we see ourselves as holy, sacred, look at each other that same way, and hear the words, you are blessed. So go in peace, serve the Lord.
Amen.
Amen.